Hey, I'm just letting you know that in February 2023, I am speaking at my friend Andy Storch's event in Sonoma, California. It's called the Talent Development Think Tank. I'll be running a session on marketing your workshops. And on day three, I'll be hosting the 2-hour workshop blueprint session. I'd love to see you there. Head on over to leannehughes.com/thinktank. Enjoy the episode. Coming up next on Leanne Hughes's Work and Live Large.
But we see examples of that at work all the time. So you go out for a meeting with someone, you're like, hey, can I have a conversation with you? And it's a leader that you look up to, or a leader that, you know, you've got to work with regularly. And they sit there and they sit down at the table and they ask you a question and you go to answer. And then they just sit back and they grab their phone and someone's messaging them. And they're like, I'm listening. But they're texting someone back from a conversation. It's the most devaluing experience. And I think, you know, just being present, engaged, making space for conversations is just, it's a real leadership characteristic, I think.
Life's too short. You're here to work and live large. Here's your host with nothing to lose, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you imagine what's possible is possible for you. Culture, organizational culture, team culture, it's a bizarre concept. Like, we can describe it, but it is hard to define what a culture is. That's not my quote. That is a quote from today's guest who has written the book on culture. I met today's guest on Clubhouse. Remember that app that was around late 2020, early 2021? Shade and I met through there through various conversations around various topics. And we finally met in real life at his book launch earlier this year in Sydney, which was just awesome. And it felt like we were old friends catching up. There is something very magical about the power of audio and how it creates a level of relationship between people. I definitely find it when I listen to my favorite podcasters and I end up meeting them, like it just feels like we're old friends. And the beauty of podcasting is that through conversation, you get to know more about a person. My guest today is Shane Michael Hatton, and his new book is called Let's Talk Culture, The Conversations You Need to Create the Team That You Want. Of course, we talk about his book and the insights of culture, as well as like what are the practical things that leaders can do to build and reinforce their culture. But Shane also shares things like his personal insights on how he handles his energy, particularly because he has been so prolific at the moment, getting out there, promoting his book, running workshops, speaking, all of that, and how he manages the contrast of being the person in the front of the room and also thriving behind the scenes. Of course, I had to geek out with Shane and talk about the Nike running app. Shane is a Queenslander by birth, Melburnian by choice, and he's curious by nature and creative at heart. Shane has spent the last decade developing remarkable leaders, teams, and cultures. Shane is a Gallup certified strengths coach and author of Lead the Room, Communicate a Message That Counts in Moments That Matter. All the details for connecting with Shane are in the show notes at podcast.leannehughes.com. And of course, connect with Shane on LinkedIn and myself. Let us know what you thought of this episode and what an insight was for you. Enjoy the episode. Thanks for joining us on the Work and Live Large podcast, Shane Michael Hatton. It's great to have you here today.
It is always a privilege to talk to you in any context. And this is especially special. So thank you.
Yeah, it's really fun just reflecting on how we met each other. And we sort of joked about Clubhouse just before I hit record. You know, what is going on with that app now? I don't even think I have it on my phone. Clubhouse.
I don't.
Then I think I was on your podcast. And then we met in Sydney recently for your book launch. And since then, you've been traveling all over the world. So like, can you tell me, like, what have you been up to in that time between sort of Sydney and this conversation today?
Yeah. Well, firstly, thank you for coming to celebrate, because that was the launch of my book and it was such a special moment. And I'm pretty sure you changed flights so that you could stick around for it. So that's really meaningful. Look, I don't take it for granted when anyone kind of comes to support anything that I do. And so, yeah, I think that just is a reflection of the kind of person you are. So thank you for that. I mean, it's been a crazy, few months. We launched the book, and obviously part of launching a book is you then go into this kind of weird press circle spiral of depression. I think it's like you spend kind of so much time writing the book, you think that when you finish writing the book, that's it. But what you learn is when you write a book, that's like the start of most people's journey. The ending of your journey is the beginning of everyone experiencing it for the first time. And so you then have to go out and write about the book, which I didn't even think was the thing. So you write the book, but then you write about the book. And so you share it with like press, you know, releases and stories, and you do kind of like guest articles on other people's contents and websites. So yeah, it was lots of writing. And then I went to the USA and I spent a couple of weeks over there. I was speaking at a conference in New York and just kind of doing some work over there. And now I'm back and loving, you know, settling back into Melbourne winter.
Well, I mean, you've been so prolific, like just out in the public square over the last few months. Like I kind of get, I look at what you're doing, what you're up to, and I'm like, I'm getting exhausted just living vicariously through your journeys. You've got a very cool, I love the way that you're shooting your reels, like how you're capturing your travels. Where'd you get the idea for that?
You know what's funny about that? It's social anxiety. That's how I started capturing it. Here's a sneak behind the scenes. So people who aren't, know this is obviously a podcast, so you're not looking at anything, but I have a real kind of thing that I do where the camera will pop up in one location, pop down, and then pop up in another one, and kind of just does that throughout the day. Now, it looks really creative, but it was founded out of a deep social anxiety, really. I'm horrible with taking videos in public. I feel really uncomfortable about doing it. But I was catching up with a friend and she said, Shane, what have you been up to? And I said, oh, I worked with this client. And I did this and I did that. She was like, Shane, you do phenomenal work and not a single person knows what you do. You need to start sharing some of that journey. And so what I found is that I have about a confidence of about 1 to 2 seconds of videoing. So what I can do is I can go somewhere, I can flip my camera up, do 2 seconds of video and drop it down and not feel too anxious. So what I did is I just did lots of those. And I've learned that if you kind of edit it together really quickly with a down and up motion, you can make it seem seamless. So that's just what I do now.
I can't believe, I'm so happy I asked you that question. I really did think, like, what kind of directing style did you get this from? Because it's super hooky, because like the transitions are really sharp and everything else.
Yeah, I call it social anxiety editing is my descriptor. Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's a pro of having a bit of social anxiety. It's funny you say that though, because I think people, I listen to people on podcasts, I think, gosh, they're so confident. And it's in some mediums, like audio is really great. Video, like, even myself, I don't mind a camera, but if I'm shooting a video in public and I see someone walking past, I have to stop mid-sentence and I've got to restart the video. I cannot keep talking. I just get so, I don't know, are you like that as well?
Yeah, that's my worst nightmare. I literally can't think of anything worse than someone watching me in a public setting film myself speaking to a camera. I went live once on my Instagram because I had my headphones in and I was walking from, I was out in the suburbs. I'd done a radio interview in like a community radio station and then was in the middle of nowhere. I was like, I don't know anybody here. Nobody knows me. Just go live on Instagram for a walk. And lasted literally about 2 minutes of going live. And I saw a group walking towards it like, hey, everyone, it's been great to chat. I've got to go. And I immediately hung up that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hang up alive. Like, can you hang up alive? Look, I'm clearly up with the Instagram and the internet.
I don't even know what the phrase is for hanging up alive, stopping. I have no idea. Hey, I want to like just quickly just dive into your book. It's called Let's Talk Culture. And it's really about the conversations that leaders need to have with their teams. And one thing that really stood out for me, and it reminded me of when I worked in corporate and I was invited to present to the executive leadership team. And I rocked up at about 10 o'clock, you know, when I was meant to present, and it got delayed. So 11:15. I'm finally called in. I get there. Half of the executive team are on their laptops while I'm presenting. And you bring this up. And I was like, someone's finally mentioned this as part of your confrontation conversation. You mentioned great leaders value important conversations, that they are punctual, they leave time to hear from you, and they remove distractions. Mm. Can you share more about that with listeners?
Yeah. I mean, part of it is like you've probably all, like, everyone can relate to a story where they've been on the receiving end of a conversation with someone who didn't value the conversation. So, I mean, I've been at times where, you know, where I first saw it is when you walk into, let's say you go to a networking event or a conference or a room and you have a conversation with someone who you really admire and you're so excited to have a conversation with them. And you can see the entire time while they're talking to you, you're making eye contact and they're looking over your shoulder. And it's not always intentional, but they're always looking around the room of who else is coming in and who am I potentially not in a conversation with. And you have that moment, and it's so deflating because you're like, you don't want to be here. You don't, you're not present. You're not engaged. But we see examples of that at work all the time. So you go out for a meeting with someone, you're like, hey, can I have a conversation with you? And it's a leader that you look up to or a leader that, you know, you've got to work with regularly. And they sit there and they sit down at the table and they ask you a question and you go to answer. And then they just sit back and they grab their phone and someone's messaging them. And they're like, I'm listening. But they're texting someone back from a conversation. It's the most devaluing experience. And I think, you know, just being present, engaged, making space for conversations is just it's a real leadership characteristic, I think.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the good thing is I'm celebrating it because you wrote about it, and we don't really see it. And I think I was trying to figure out, why don't people talk about this, something as simple as this? Because, you know, to most, in terms of common courtesy, it sounds like a simple thing, but it actually does need to be sort of written about, spoken about, as a, you know, the way that you treat a human in terms of their decency is, it's the same with leadership as well. Mm. And I've just got what I'm so curious around, and we're both on LinkedIn, and we both read books, and like, there's so many amazing books and TED Talks about great culture and great leadership. Yet I still hear many stories about poor leadership and poor cultures. Why do you think that is, like, all this information and knowledge, yet it's still, things are, still not good?
It's tricky, because I think there's so many excellent pieces of work out there, and some excellent thinking around all kinds of topics. My biggest concern, or my biggest challenge in writing the book, was not to add more white noise. Because the truth is, like, there is so much information. We're information rich, we're attention poor. So we need something that is directly relevant to where we are now and directly practical to what we can do next. And so this is the challenge, is going, I love some of the books that I read, and I go, but I'm actually not experiencing that challenge right now. And I also don't know what I would go to put it into practice next. Mm-hmm. And so I love it, I enjoy it, but I don't do anything with it. And so I think part of it, that's the challenge of writing any book, is writing it to a very specific audience. So when you write it to a specific audience, they go, oh yes, this is speaking to where I'm at right now. And then making sure it's practical for that people, which means I know what to go and do with that. So culture, like many things, is one of those things that's really easy to describe, hard to define, and even harder to apply. And so my goal of writing was ultimately to go, hey, if I could give you something that helps you make sense of this really complex, tricky, confusing thing called culture, and give you practical next steps, then that's my goal.
That's awesome. And so you were very specific in targeting mid-level leaders, which is great, because you know, you always hear these phrases like leadership starts at the top, but I definitely, like you, believe that there is room to influence at that level. You went on extensive research, like even going through the back of your book, like the amount of like the appendix and where you've researched, what you're sourcing, was extensive. But can you talk through, you know, you engaged a research company and maybe a couple of those findings that you got from that?
Yeah. So if you're going to write a book about culture, like, it's really hard to not repeat stuff that's already out there. And so my challenge was going, how do I not just replicate what everyone else is saying? I need to know what they're saying, but not just feel like I'm regurgitating it. I wanted to know more specifically what kind of Australian managers felt. So most of the time when I read a book, I always look at it and go, oh, that's an amazing stat. And I go back to the report and it's like, you know, it's a stat from South America, or if it's a stat from the US, or it's a stat from the UK. And I'm like, oh, I wonder, like, is that applicable here for Australia? So when I wrote, I was like, I'm really intentional. I want to get Australian research. So I engaged McCrindle, who are just a great research company. And I said, hey, I want to study managers in Australia, but I want them to not be in the C-suite. Like, I feel like there's too much already targeted at C-suite. It's relevant to them, but it's not for them. And I also want them to be people who are leading functions or teams. So there were some people who were managers by title, but they didn't lead people. And I was like, that's fine. They're no less of a leader. They're just as much of a leader. But if you're going to talk about how to have a conversation with your team, it helps to have a team. So we studied 1,002, strange number. We went for 1,000. We got a bonus two somewhere. So we got 1,002 managers, and we just explored everything about their perspective with culture.
That's awesome. And what was like, what did anything surprise you as a result of that research?
So much. Look, I think there were a few hypotheses that I went into the kind of research. I go, this is my general sense of what managers think and feel, and I want to kind of test that. And I was totally happy to be wrong. And there were some that I was wrong on. So the one that I got wrong is, I felt like culture was something that executive leaders and senior leaders talk about all the time, but probably maybe middle managers don't even think about it or talk about it or care about it. And I was like, well, I want to know what they think. And 99% said culture plays an integral role in the overall success of an organization. So everybody understood how important it was. So that was really amazing. But this, where it fell over is that we then said, is culture something that can be influenced, or does it just happen? And 50% said culture just happens. It can't be influenced. And that really surprised me. So we dug a lot deeper in our qualitative interviews with people going, tell us what you mean by that. And I think there's a couple of, like, I don't think we fully got to the bottom of it. My general understanding is people said, you can't influence where the culture happens, but you can influence the kind of culture that happens. And that was where we landed on this idea. So people said, you know what? Culture is always going to happen. Wherever you've got a team, you've got a culture. But if you want it to be a good culture or the culture you want, it just takes effort and intention.
Yeah, absolutely. And even like when I was working, again, just referring back to my internal days, but I was working on level 5, you go to level 7, completely different culture. You'd walk to the other side of the level 7 building and you'd hear like more voices and things like that. And it definitely was a replication of who the leader was and what they were doing with that team in terms of that subculture. Obviously, I wanted to just go on maybe Tim Ferriss would call it a 90-degree left turn here, but publishing a book. I mean, I love the thing about business that's really cool and life as well is that something like Jenny Blake, she calls it serendipity popcorn. So you can be doing certain things and then things just pop and you get really cool opportunities as a result of this. Your book, it's had phenomenal reviews. I think people are loving the pragmatic nature of it, as you alluded to, and that was your intention with it. Has anything sort of cool, interesting come out as an opportunity from writing this book?
Oh my gosh. So many opportunities have come from writing the book. What surprised me with this book and probably a little bit of the last one was how many people like coincidentally who work with you just happen to have been just reading your book. So just today I had a phone call with someone who reached out to me and they were like, I was sitting at my desk and we're looking for a speaker to come and do a series of leadership workshops for us next year. And they presented me this glossy brochure and there were like 4 keynote speakers in it. And you were one of those people. She said, but I just picked up your book 3 weeks ago and I've been reading it. And immediately I knew we've got to kind of do some work together. So there's moments like that that are just recurring over and over again, where people are like, I was passing through an airport. I picked up your book and it's been amazing. And we should do something together. I don't know what it is, but we should do something together just because they've really resonated with the content of the book. So it is this big, fat, heavy business card that goes beyond where I would typically give it out. And people are just, it's like picking it up off the sidewalk and going, who is this? Oh my gosh, we should figure this out.
Yeah. And there's something also like the front cover is outstanding. Like I think your designer was also
very cool, isn't it?
At the book launch party. And you attracted some just awesome people to that. It was such a good night. I'm so happy that I did change my flight and attend because
I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, you just rock up and talk to anyone that was there. It was that type of, it didn't even feel like networking at all. It was more just celebrating the great work that you've done. Now this podcast is called Work and Live Large. When you hear that phrase, what does that mean to you, Shane?
Oh my gosh. When I hear that, it to be perfectly honest, it's overwhelming to me. That's scary. Because the concept of, you know, of that largeness that comes from that, I'm the natural person who can tend to retreat back and feel really energized by sitting with myself. To be perfectly honest, that kind of thing overwhelms me and scares me, but also creates an internal desire to go, oh, maybe there's potential in that. That's kind of my immediate thought.
Yeah. So tell me more about that. Because I think you are getting on stages, you are speaking in workshops. You just mentioned that you like being that internal. How do you navigate both of those worlds?
Yeah, I think I've described myself to people as a charismatic introvert, which means that like when I go out, I flick the switch on. And then I come home and I cry in the shower. But it's essentially like for me, just that experience of, okay, when I'm on, I need to be on. And really that is about, for me, it's all about service. Like it's about serving people in the work that I do. And so when I get into a room, I've got 2 options. I go into the room and I put my front-facing selfie camera on and everything becomes about me. Or I have to just make that conscious choice where actually right now I'm in service of other people and I need to flip the camera. And so in order to do that, I'm in the room and I'm like, how do I help you? How do I be the best for you? And then at the end of the day, when I get home, the camera flicks back around and go, hey, what do you need now?
Oh, that's such a cool metaphor. You know, it's fine. It's really embarrassing when you're taking a photo of someone and you open the camera and it's automatically on selfie mode.
Terrifying.
You're like,
how many chins did I have? I'm like, I'm looking at the thing, looking down at my phone. I have those moments where I'm like scrolling on Instagram and occasionally like your phone will die and you get the black screen and then you can see yourself in the black screen and you're like, oh my gosh, is this what I look like when I'm just like absorbed in social media?
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of social media, like, I mean, like I alluded to before, we did meet on Clubhouse. And even from that, like, there's no way I would have guessed that you have this sort of like the mode where you are that sort of introvert that really likes that time. Do you think Clubhouse, I mean, because it was an audio platform, we both got really into it in those first like couple of months. We were constantly on there. What was appealing? What appealed to you the most during that time?
Well, it was funny because the reason why I felt like I discovered Clubhouse is that I was in Queensland, in Brisbane, for to visit family in between some of Melbourne's lockdowns. And I was getting ready to come home, and we were in Brisbane where Brisbane went into a 3-day lockdown. And my family lives up in Bundaberg. And so I ended up jumping in a car and driving up to Bundaberg and quarantining at my parents' house. And as a result of that, I was in kind of isolation lockdown and discovered this thing called Clubhouse. And I had major FOMO because it was exclusive, and I managed to get an invite from somebody and then just got addicted to not the platform, but the people. I don't know. Like you said before, like I had this kind of amazing group of people show up to my book launch. I feel like the thing that has become really important to me more so in recent years has been collecting really great people. And like some people collect things, people collect artifacts. I'm like, I just want to collect people, like really interesting people. And so when I was in the room for the book launch, I was looking around going, oh my gosh, I would never normally spend time with any of these people, but I love every single person in this room. And I love that they're all mixing and coming together. So yeah, I think it was about the desire to be around interesting and clever people that was probably most appealing to me.
Yeah. I mean, and you mentioned the phrase before, charismatic introvert. And I got to say, people say, you know, you have a face for radio, but you literally have a voice for radio, Shane, like your voice. I don't know what it was about Clubhouse, but you communicate with such, I mean, very clever and smart communicator, but also your voice just conveys trust. Has anyone ever told you that? Do you see that as a strength?
No, but I appreciate that a lot. I mean, personally, I struggle to listen to myself back. So when I'm editing podcasts for myself, I really struggle with that. But I think, you know, I've always aspired to look, there's a story that I tell in one of the workshops. It was about running the marathon in 2013 when I was in Paris. It was my first experience. And the part of the story that I often don't tell, which is the kind of finishing line, crossing the finish line moment where my wife had, you know, kind of already finished maybe 30 minutes before I did. And I really didn't think I could do it. And my dad had finished like an hour before then. He was phenomenal. But I remember coming to the finish line in this moment of complete like exhaustion going, I don't know if I could do this, kind of just expecting to get the thrill of crossing a finish line. But yet when I got to the finish line, my wife and my dad were standing there. And there was this like moment where it almost like filled me with this energy to kind of make that final dash across the line. And of course, I crossed the line, broke down in tears. It was just so overwhelming. But the moment for me was like the strength that you can draw from looking to the sideline and see someone who's in your corner was just so a moving moment for me. And so I think I committed to trying to be that person that when other people look over their shoulder, they see me in their corner. And when I'm, you know, whether that's coaching, whether that's just friendship, or whether that's just people we meet randomly, I want them to, you know, feel that when they've had a conversation with me, they walk away going, felt like that guy was on my side, regardless of what side that was. So yeah, I think it's really, I'm grateful to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that really does shine through. Because on that, I mean, sometimes when, like, let's just say I neglect a relationship, I always sort of rationalize it with, oh, I'm really busy, I've got stuff going on. I mean, that's, and I think back to sort of John Howard, our prime minister, and even Obama in the US, who always made time to exercise for like an hour every day. It's like, if they can do it, you know, I can do it, yeah. / invest in my relationships. You achieve an awful lot. So I think today you had a few keynotes, now you're in a podcast, you've written a couple of books. So how do you maintain that balance between like getting things done, taking action on an idea, and also maintaining the things that are important to you?
I mean, if there's an answer to this question, I think that whoever that person is able to answer it will make a lot of money from that. I don't know that I've found, I would say, I've said to a few people recently, I feel like I've got really good boundaries. So I know what I say yes to and what I say no to. And I know it because I've said yes to too many things and it's resulted in having really bad outcomes for me. So now I always run it through the filter. I know every time that I say yes to one thing, by default, I say no to another. So I always have to evaluate what am I saying no to by saying yes to this. And that helps me to evaluate in much more clarity about what are the things that I want to say yes to. So I give more to my yes by knowing what I'm saying no to. So I can give a firmer yes when I say, yeah, this is what I'm saying yes to. The other thing is one of my favorite expressions, it comes from a guy, he's got a podcast in the US, name's Andy Stanley. He said, is this a problem to solve or a tension to manage? And he said, we always work out if it's a problem to solve, we'll address it and it won't show up again. He said, but if it's a tension to manage, it will keep resurfacing over time. And so it's like work-life kind of boundaries, all those things, is like not one of those things that you go, great, I've solved that problem, on to the next thing. Because when you solve it, your life adjusts and changes and it shows up again. So for me, I always view this is a tension to manage, which means sometimes I'm going to get it right, sometimes I'm going to get it wrong. But either way, I'm constantly working on managing that tension.
Oh gosh, that's really good. It sort of reminds me of what Nir Eyal talks about in Indistractable. He's like, when you are getting distracted, like, what is it that's drawing you to that other thing? You know, is it the phone, or is it you're trying to escape the work that you're doing? And I'm like, oh yeah, it's totally.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Trying to escape, like just like that mindless sort of scrolling as well. And I've just pointed to, I've got a not to-do list, because I need to, in advance, just be like, right, here are some things I just cannot, I'm going to stop saying yes to. And that sort of helped. But like you said, then it creates some new problems that I have to.
Yeah. I was listening to someone the other day. Look, I should probably say that better. I was scrolling TikTok because, you know, like when I said I heard someone talk about this the other day, it sounds a lot more professional, but the reality is I saw it on TikTok. It was like relationship advice. And they said something to the effect of, we often leave the 85% that we have in pursuit of the 15, and the 15 is the thing that we're not getting. And when we finally get the 15, we're fulfilled by the 15 and realize we lost the 85. And it was a relational thing, but I think that principle applies in a whole lot of concepts, right? So you've got something here and you go, there's something that I'm lacking in this. And we make our pursuit the thing that we're lacking. And we finally get that one thing that we were lacking, and we realize we lost all the things that we actually had as real valuable over here. So I always just think like, okay, you know, what am I looking for in my phone that I'm not getting from in my work right now? And how do I try to incorporate it into my work and appreciate that all the thing that I do have? Otherwise, I'll get the 15% from the social media, but I'll lose the 85% of the benefit that comes from my work or my life.
Yeah. And even that, good point. I mean, when I think about that, even scrolling Instagram, it's like to stay connected to all these people, but it's like, am I staying connected just by sitting here watching there? I mean, and not interacting and not calling them? Like, is it really maintaining a friendship? I don't know.
I know, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, like I feel like from my observations of you, you seem to be a really well-structured person around what you say yes to, what you say no to. The fact that you have a to not do list is actually says a lot about the kind of person you are. Like how do you manage all of that?
Well, I had to do it because I think last year I overcommitted and my calendar was just overflowing with stuff. And I just had to make a decision. It was a Tim Ferriss call in one of the episodes he did at the beginning of the year. He talked about his not to do list. So basically just went in and looked at that. And then also created paths if things did come along. And I think MBS, Marco Bungay Senior, who's, is on the front page of your book. He also has like no, templates. So because I just don't like letting people down, and I don't know if I can get over that, but I can create maybe a system or something in advance to help me through that. But you're right. I do sort of rely on my routines, and I'm in a mastermind group actually the other week, and I said to them, look, I'm not answering your calls immediately. Just send me a text and I'll call you back. But I don't answer phone calls because it'll distract me. I need to remain focused. And actually one of the women in my group said, oh yeah, I've been intimidated to call you. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I'm so sorry it's hard.
It's a tension to manage, right? It's funny that you talk about the templates thing, because when I emailed MBS about writing an endorsement for my book, I got his kind of no template, and it wasn't a no template. It was basically like, I obviously get a lot of requests. Here's my default response, which is, if you don't hear from me, the answer is no. But if I do want to write something, then I'll come back to you and write something. Now I'm so grateful that he came back to me and wrote something, but by allowing that, it set my expectations really clear, really early. And that was so helpful just to be able to do.
And I think it relates to what you talk about in your book as well, like just over communicating, and just so rather than like not even responding at all and just ghosting, it's like setting a standard, and at least you've got some certainty on where you are from here. So I think that all links in. By the way, because we're on talking live, we mentioned TikTok and social media. Let's both geek out on Coach Bennett from the Nike running app for a second.
Please. Absolute fan.
I love him. Yeah. No one else knows him.
I've run the don't want to run. I can't tell you how many times he has it. For those people who are listening going, who is Coach Bennett? Like Coach Bennett is like Nike's head trainer, basically running trainer. And he has in the Nike running app, he has guided runs, which I use you know, quite religiously when I run, where he talks you through and he kind of asks questions, he'll give you some inspiration. But the don't want to run is basically when you don't feel like going for a run, he peps you up and talks you through it. And I can't tell you how many times I've run it.
Yeah. And you get home, you're like, I can't believe I went for a run. I think there's one I did in Bangkok. It was like, it's okay to not be okay. I was like, this is so good. Yes. And it's not like, this is not running. This is like a psycho, like some therapy, like, but
this is high intensity therapy.
It's so nice that someone else knows who he is, because I geek about him all the time and no one really cares, but he's awesome. Okay.
Chad, my challenge is though, when I'm running with Coach Bennett, he often drops these little gold nuggets and I'm running. And so I'm trying to grab my phone out and take notes of what he said whilst I'm running.
Me too. I'm exactly the same. Or even screenshotting. When did he say that? Because you have to get, exactly. You can't really sort of play it back. You'll have to be on a run to sort of pick it up. Yep. So Shane, I've got a few sort of rapid round questions before we end the conversation. What is a book that has shaped the way that you think?
Oh my gosh. I have so many, just to pick one. Look, to be honest, the one that I absolutely love is The Moment of Lift by Melinda Gates. Amazing. I mean, as a very privileged, you know, white man, it's really nice to hear perspectives from like global perspectives from what she's been doing in her work, but also perspectives about women around the world. It was really, really, eye-opening for me.
Awesome. I haven't read it, so I'll have to check it out. Thank you. Is there an app or a tool that you love that you'd like to recommend?
Oh, look, I love ClickUp. I've only just moved my practice onto ClickUp this year with my business manager and I. We work together to stay on top of the work that I do. I'm very much an abstract kind of drawing list person everywhere. And this kind of brings everything into a central place, which I really enjoy it.
Can I ask you a question on that? Because I'm trying to use Notion and I've got everything set up, but I'm still using random notes, iPad, phone notes. How are you maintaining like your own sort of discipline by putting things into ClickUp?
Yeah, look, I have three very clear systems that I operate around. My three modes that I function in are think, sell, and deliver. As a business owner, I spend time developing my IT, IP, I spend time delivering it, I spend time selling it. So for me, all of my IT content creation lives in Evernote. So when I write, I plan, I scheme, I dream and do all those things, that's my think time. When I'm in sell mode, I mean like things like ActiveCampaign and my sales pipelines and tools. And then when I'm in deliver mode, where it's like, I've got to get work done, I live in ClickUp. So when I'm in that mode, I'm really clear to go, okay, I'm not in think and I'm not in sell. So close ActiveCampaign, close Evernote, sit in ClickUp and get through your task, get it done like that, brain dump into there, and then switch that off. When I want to go into think, I turn off my task list and I turn off my marketing so I can just stay in the think zone.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that, how you sort of isolate each of those. That sort of reminds me just of my workflow, moving from like thinking to actually developing. So if I'm thinking, I get out of this office and work at another part of the house, but you're doing that with your tools, which is awesome to hear. What's a song that gets you fired up, Shane?
Oh my gosh. my go-to pump up song is Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. It every time gets me going without doubt.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's such a good song. And a favorite quote of yours?
Oh, okay. I use this one quite a lot, but I have to say it's my favorite, which is it's a one by Madeleine L'Engle that says, "The moment we begin to think we have all the answers, we forget all the questions." And I think that I just love that. And which was another one, which I actually just used in a reel recently, which is by Naguib Mahfouz, which is essentially, I think came out of MBS's book, which is, you can tell a person is clever by their answers. You can tell a person is wise by their questions. So common theme.
That's awesome. That's actually perfect. Great quotes for my other podcast, First Time Facilitator. So we might have to play this back on that podcast as well. Shane, is there anything else you'd like to share with listeners?
Honestly, I just want to say thank you for allowing me to kind of be a part of this. And I honestly just think you're an incredible human, very clever human being. And it's just been a privilege to have a conversation with you in any format.
Oh, thanks so much, Shane. And where can people find you if they want to connect and learn more about your book and the work that you do?
Yes. I mean, Let's Talk Culture is out pretty much anywhere you get your books, which is, where you can get that. And then I kind of live under Shane M. Hatton everywhere you can find. So Instagram, Twitter, social media, everywhere social media is under Shane M. Hatton. Not under Shane Hatton because he's a professional golfer, and not under Shane Marie Hatton, who just went to prison, I've discovered based on my Google notifications. So Shane Michael Hatton is what it stands for.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for being here. You're a champ. Thanks, Shane.
Thank you.
You're the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to Work and Live Large. I really appreciate you. If you know someone in your network and you think, oh my gosh, they've got so much potential, like I want them to live and work larger, send them this episode. I think they might appreciate it. I also appreciate hearing from you, your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, anything. You can shoot me an email, hello@leannehughes.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search for Leanne Hughes. Stay up to date with all the episodes by heading on over to leannehughes.com/subscribe, and all the best with your week as you go around living it up.